There are three men on a train. One of them is an economist, and one of them is a logician, and one of them is a mathematician. And they've just crossed the border into Scotland. I don't know why they're going to Scotland. And they see a brown cow standing in a field from the window of the train, and the cow is standing parallel to the train. And the economist says, "Look, the cows in Scotland are brown." And the logician says, "No, there are cows in Scotland of which one, at least, is brown." And the mathematician says, "No, there is at least one cow in Scotland of which one side appears to be brown." And it's funny, because economists are not real scientists, and because logicians think more clearly, but mathematicians are best. And when I'm in a new place, because I see everything, it's like when a computer is doing too many things at the same time, and the central processor unit is blocked up, and there isn't any space left to think about other things. And when I'm in a new place, and there are lots of people there, it's even harder, because people are not like cows and flowers and grass, and they can talk to you and do things that you don't expect, so you have to notice everything that is in the place, and also you have to notice things that might happen as well. And sometimes, when I'm in a new place and there are lots of people there, it's like a computer crashing, and I have to close my eyes and put my hands over my ears and groan, which is like pressing Ctrl-Alt-Delete and shutting down programs and turning the computer off and rebooting so that I can remember what I'm doing and where I'm meant to be going. And that's why I'm good at chess and maths and logic, because most people are almost blind and they don't see most things, and there's lots of spare capacity in their heads, and it's filled with things which aren't connected and are silly, like, "I'm worried that I might have left the gas cooker on." Chapter 191. My train set had a little building that was two rooms with a corridor between them, and one was the ticket office where you bought the tickets, and one was a waiting room where you waited for the train. But the train station in Swindon wasn't like that. It was a tunnel and some stairs and a shop and a cafe and a waiting room. And it was like standing on a cliff in a really strong wind, because it made me feel giddy and sick, because there were lots of people walking into and out of the tunnel, and it was really echoey, and there was only one way to go, and that was down the tunnel, and it smelt of toilets and cigarettes. So I stood against the wall and held on to the edge of a sign that said, "Customers seeking access to car park, please use assistance phone opposite, right of the ticket office," to make sure that I didn't fall over and go into a crouch on the ground. And I wanted to go home, but I was frightened of going home. And I tried to make a plan of what I should do in my head, but there were too many things to look at and too many things to hear. So I put my hands over my ears to block out the noise and think. And I thought that I had to stay in the station to get on a train, and I had to sit down somewhere, and there was nowhere to sit down near the door of the station, so I had to walk down the tunnel. So I said to myself, in my head, not out loud, "I will walk down the tunnel, and there might be somewhere I can sit down, and then I can shut my eyes and I can think." And I walked down the tunnel, trying to concentrate on the sign at the end of the tunnel that said, "Warning, CCTV in operation." And it was like stepping off the cliff onto a tightrope. And eventually I got to the end of the tunnel, and there were some stairs, and I went up the stairs, and there were still lots of people, and I groaned, and there was a shop at the top of the stairs, and a room with chairs in, but there were too many people in the room with chairs in, so I walked past it. And there were signs saying, "Great Western," and "Cold beers and lagers," and "Caution, wet floor," and "Your 50p will keep a premature baby alive for 1.8 seconds, and "Transforming travel," and "Refreshingly different," and "It's delicious, it's creamy, and it's only £1.30 hot choc deluxe," and 0870-777-7676, and "The lemon tree," and "No smoking," and "Fine teas." And there were some little tables with chairs next to them, and no one was sitting at one of the tables, and it was in a corner. And I sat down on one of the chairs next to it, and I closed my eyes. and I put my hands in my pockets, and Toby climbed into my hand, and I gave him 2 pellets of rat food from my bag, and I gripped the Swiss Army knife in the other hand, and I groaned to cover up the noise, because I had taken my hands off my ears, but not so loud that other people would hear me groaning and come and talk to me. And then I tried to think about what I had to do, but I couldn't think, because there were too many other things in my head. So I did a maths problem to make my head clearer. And the maths problem that I did was called Conway's Soldiers. And in Conway's Soldiers, you have a chessboard that continues infinitely in all directions, and every square below a horizontal line has a coloured tile on it. And you can move a coloured tile only if you can jump over a coloured tile, horizontally or vertically, but not diagonally, into an empty square 2 squares away. And when you move a coloured tile in this way, you have to remove the coloured tile that it jumped over. And you have to see how far you get the coloured tiles above the starting horizontal line. And I know what the answer is, because however you move the coloured tiles, you'll never get a coloured tile more than 4 squares above the starting horizontal line. But it is a good maths problem to do in your head when you don't want to think about something else, because you can make it as complicated as you need to fill your brain by making the board as big as you want and the moves as complicated as you want. And then I looked up and saw that there was a policeman standing in front of me, and he was saying, "Anyone at home?" But I didn't know what that meant. And then he said, "Are you all right, young man?" I looked at him, and I thought for a bit so that I'd answer the question correctly, and I said, "No." And he said, "You're looking a bit worse for wear." He had a gold ring on one of his fingers, and it had curly letters on it, but I couldn't see what the letters were. Then he said, "The lady at the cafe says you've been here for 2.5 hours, and when she tried talking to you, you were in a complete trance." Then he said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Christopher Boone." And he said, "Where'd you live?" And I said, 36 Randolph Street. And I started feeling better, because I like policemen, and it was an easy question. And I wondered whether I should tell him that Father killed Wellington and whether he would arrest Father. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I needed to sit down and be quiet and think." And he said, "Okay, let's keep it simple. What are you doing at the railway station?" And I said, "I'm going to see Mother." And he said, "Mother?" And I said, "Yes, Mother." And he said, "When's your train?" And I said, "I don't know. She lives in London. I don't know when there's a train to London." And he said, "So you don't live with your mother?" And I said, "No, but I'm going to." And then he sat down next to me and said, "So, where does your mother live?" And I said, "In London." And he said, "Yes, but where in London?" And I said, 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG. And he said, "Jesus, what's that?" And I looked down and I said, "That's my pet rat, Toby," because he was looking out of my pocket at the policeman. And the policeman said, "A pet rat?" And I said, "Yes, a pet rat. He's very clean and he hasn't got bubonic plague." And the policeman said, "Well, that's reassuring." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Have you got a ticket?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Have you got any money to get a ticket?" And I said, "No." And he said, "So how precisely were you going to get to London then?" And then I didn't know what to say, because I had Father's cash point card in my pocket, and it was illegal to steal things, but he was a policeman, so I had to tell the truth. So I said, "I have a cash point card," and I took it out of my pocket and showed it to him, and this was a white lie. But the policeman said, "Is this your card?" And then I thought he might arrest me, so I said, "No, it's Father's." And he said, "Father's?" And I said, "Yes, Father's." And he said, "Okay." But he said it really slowly, and he squeezed his nose between his thumb and his forefinger. And I said, "He told me the number," which was another white lie. And he said, "Why don't you and I take a stroll to the cash point machine, eh?" And I said, "You mustn't touch me." And he said, "Why would I want to touch you?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well, neither do I." And I said, "Because I got a caution for hitting a policeman, and I didn't mean to hurt him, and if I do it again, I'll get into even bigger trouble." And then he looked at me and he said, "You're serious, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You lead the way." And I said, "Where?" And he said, "Back by the ticket office." And he pointed with his thumb. And then we walked back through the tunnel. But it wasn't so frightening this time, because there was a policeman with me. And I put the cash point card into the machine like Father had let me do sometimes when we were shopping together. And it said, "Enter your personal number." And I typed in 3558 and pressed the Enter button. And the machine said, "Please enter an amount." And there was a choice. £10, £20, £50, £100, other amount, multiples of 10 only. And I asked the policeman, "How much does it cost to get a ticket for a train to London?" And he said, "About 20 quid. And I said, "Is that pounds?" And he said, "Christ alive!" And he laughed. But I didn't laugh, because I don't like people laughing at me, even if they are policemen. And he stopped laughing and he said, "Yep, it's £20. So I pressed 50, and 5 £10 notes came out of the machine and a receipt, and I put the notes and the receipt and the card into my pocket. And the policeman said, "Well, I guess I shouldn't keep you chatting any longer." And I said, "Where do I get a ticket for the train from? Because if you're lost and you need directions, you can ask a policeman." And he said, "You are a prize specimen, aren't you?" And I said, "Where do I get a ticket for the train from?" Because he hadn't answered my question. And he said, "In there." And he pointed. And there was a big room with a glass window on the other side of the train station door. And then he said, "Now, are you sure you know what you're doing?" And I said, "Yes. I'm going to London to live with my mother." And he said, "Has your mother got a telephone number?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "And can you tell me what it is?" And I said, "Yes. It's 0208-887-8907. And he said, "And you'll ring her if you get into any trouble, okay?" And I said, "Yes, because I knew you could ring people from phone boxes if you had money, and I had money now." And he said, "Good." And I walked into the ticket office, and I turned round, and I could see that the policeman was still watching me, so I felt safe. And there was a long desk at the other side of the big room, and a window on the desk, and there was a man standing in front of the window, and there was a man behind the window, and I said to the man behind the window, "I want to go to London." And the man in front of the window said, "If you don't mind." And he turned round so that his back was towards me, and the man behind the window gave him a little bit of paper to sign, and he signed it and pushed it back under the window. And the man behind the window gave him a ticket. And then the man in front of the window looked at me and he said, "What the fuck are you looking at?" And then he walked away. And he had dreadlocks, which is what some black people have, but he was white. And dreadlocks is when you never wash your hair and it looks like old rope. And he had red trousers with stars on, and I kept my hand on my Swiss Army knife in case he touched me. And then there was no one else in front of the window, and I said to the man behind the window, "I want to go to London." And I hadn't been frightened when I was with the policeman, but I turned round and I saw that he had gone now, and I was scared again. So I tried to pretend I was playing a game on my computer, and it was called Train to London, and it was like Myst or The 11th Hour, and you had to solve lots of different problems to get to the next level, and I could turn it off at any time. And the man said,
"Single or return?"
And I said, "What does single or return mean?"
And he said, "Do you want to go one way or do you want to go and come back?"
And I said, "I want to stay there when I get there."
And he said, "For how long?"
And I said, "Until I go to university."
And he said, "Single then?"
And then he said,
"That will be £17.
And I gave him the £50, and he gave me 30 back and said,
"Don't you go throwing it away."
And then he gave me a little yellow and orange ticket and £3 in coins, and I put it all in my pocket with my knife.
and I didn't like the ticket being half yellow, but I had to keep it because it was my train ticket. And then he said, if you could move away from the counter. And I said, when is the train to London? And he looked at his watch and he said, platform one, 5 minutes. And I said, where is platform one? And he pointed and said, through the underpass and up the stairs, you'll see the signs. An underpass meant tunnel, because I could see where he was pointing, so I went out of the ticket office. But it wasn't like a computer game at all, because I was in the middle of it, and it was like all the signs were shouting in my head, and someone bumped into me as they walked past, and I made a noise like a dog barking to scare them off. And I pictured in my head a big red line across the floor, which started at my feet and went through the tunnel. And I started walking along the red line, saying, left, right, left, right, left, right. Because sometimes, when I'm frightened or angry, it helps if I do something that has a rhythm to it, like music or drumming, which is something Siobhan taught me to do. And I went up the stairs, and I saw a sign saying, platform one. And the arrow was pointing at a glass door, so I went through it. And someone bumped into me again with a suitcase, and I made another noise like a dog barking. And they said, watch where the hell you're going. But I pretended that they were just one of the guarding demons in Train to London. And there was a train. And I saw a man with a newspaper and a bag of golf clubs go up to one of the doors of the train and press a big button next to it. And the doors were electronic, and they slid open. And I liked that. And then the doors closed behind him. And then I looked at my watch, and 3 minutes had gone past since I was at the ticket office, which meant that the train would be going in 2 minutes. And then I went up to the door, and I pressed the big button, and the doors slid open, and I stepped through the doors, and I was on the train to London. Chapter 193. When I used to play with my train set, I made a train timetable because I like timetables. And I like timetables because I like to know when everything's going to happen. And this was my timetable when I lived at home with Father, and I thought that Mother was dead from a heart attack. This was the timetable for a Monday, and also it's an approximation. 7:20 a.m. wake up. 7:25 a.m. clean teeth and wash face. 7:30 a.m. give Toby food and water. 7:40 a.m. have breakfast. 8 a.m. put school clothes on. 8:05 a.m. pack school bag. 8:10 a.m. read book or watch video. 8:32 a.m. catch bus to school. 8:43 a.m. go past tropical fish shop. 8:51 a.m. arrive at school. 9 a.m. school assembly. 9:15 a.m. first morning class. 10:30 a.m. break. 10:50 a.m. art class with Mrs. Peters. In the art class we do art, but in the first morning class and the first afternoon class and the second afternoon class we do lots of different things, like reading and tests and social skills and looking after animals and what we did at the weekend and writing and maths and stranger danger and money and personal hygiene. 12:30 p.m. lunch. 1 p.m. first afternoon class. 2:15 p.m. second afternoon class. 3:30 p.m. catch school bus home. 3:49 p.m. get off school bus at home. 3:50 p.m. have juice and snack. 3:55 p.m. give Toby food and water. 4 p.m. take Toby out of his cage. 4:18 p.m. put Toby into his cage. 4:20 p.m. watch television or a video. 5 p.m. read a book. 6 p.m. have tea. 6:30 p.m. watch television or a video. 7 p.m. do maths practice. 8 p.m. have a bath. 8:15 p.m. get changed into pyjamas. 8:20 p.m. play computer games. 9 p.m. watch television or a video. 9:20 p.m. have juice and a snack. 9:30 p.m. go to bed. And at the weekend, I make up my own timetable, and I write it down on a piece of cardboard, and I put it up on the wall. And it says things like feed Toby or do maths or go to the shop to buy sweets. And that's one of the other reasons why I don't like France, because when people are on holiday, they don't have a timetable. And I had to get Mother and Father to tell me every morning exactly what we were going to do that day to make me feel better. Because time is not like space. And when you put something down somewhere, like a protractor or a biscuit, you can have a map in your head to tell you where you've left it. But even if you don't have a map, it will still be there, because a map is a representation of things that actually exist, so you can find the protractor or biscuit again. And a timetable is a map of time, except that if you don't have a timetable, time's not there like the landing and the garden and the route to school, because time is only the relationship between the way different things change, like the Earth going round the sun, and atoms vibrating and clocks ticking, and day and night and waking up and going to sleep. And it's like west or nor-nor-east, which won't exist when the Earth stops existing and falls into the sun, because it's only a relationship between the North Pole and the South Pole and everywhere else, like Mogadishu and Sunderland and Canberra. And it isn't a fixed relationship, like the relationship between our house and Mrs. Shear's house, or like the relationship between 7 and 865, but it depends on how fast you're going relative to a specific point. And if you go off in a spaceship and you travel near the speed of light, you may come back and find that all your family is dead and you're still young and it'll be the future, but your clock will say that you've only been away for a few days or months. And because nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, this means that we can only know about a fraction of the things that go on in the universe. And this means that time is a mystery, and not even a thing. And no one has ever solved the puzzle of what time is exactly. And so, if you get lost in time, it's like being lost in a desert, except that you can't see the desert because it's not a thing. And this is why I like timetables, because they make sure you don't get lost in time. Chapter 197. There were lots of people on the train, and I didn't like that, because I don't like lots of people I don't know, and I hate it even more if I'm stuck in a room with lots of people I don't know. And a train is like a room, and you can't get out of it when it's moving. And it made me think of when I had to come home in the car from school one day because the bus had broken down, and Mother came and picked me up. And Mrs. Peters asked Mother if she could take Jack and Polly home because their mothers couldn't come and pick them up. And Mother said yes. But I started screaming in the car because there were too many people in it, and Jack and Polly weren't in my class, and Jack bangs his head on things and makes a noise like an animal. And I tried to get out of the car, but it was still going along, and I fell out onto the road, and I had to have stitches in my head, and they had to shave the hair off, and it took 3 months for it to grow back to the way it was before. So I stood very still in the train carriage and didn't move. And then I heard someone say, "Christopher." And I thought it would be someone I knew, like a teacher from school, or one of the people who live in our street, but it wasn't. It was the policeman again. And he said, "Caught you just in time." And he was breathing really loud and holding his knees. And I didn't say anything. And he said, "We've got your father at the police station." And I thought he was going to say that they had arrested Father for killing Wellington, but he didn't. He said, "He's looking for you." And I said, "I know." And he said, "So, why are you going to London?" And I said, "Because I'm going to live with Mother." And he said, "Well, I think your father might have something to say about that." And then I thought that he was going to take me back to Father. And that was frightening, because he was a policeman, and policemen are meant to be good. So I started to run away, but he grabbed me and I screamed. And then he let go. And he said, "Okay, let's not get overexcited here." And then he said, "I'm going to take you back to the police station, and you and me and your dad can sit down and have a little chat about who's going where." And I said, "I'm going to live with Mother in London." And he said, "Not just yet, you're not." And I said, "Have you arrested Father?" And he said, "Arrested him? What for?" And I said, "He killed a dog with a garden fork. The dog was called Wellington." And the policeman said, "Did he now?" And I said, "Yes, he did." And he said, "Well, we can talk about that as well." And then he said, "Right, young man, I think you've done enough adventuring for one day." And then he reached out to touch me again, and I started to scream again, and he said, "Now listen, you little monkey, you can either do what I say, or I'm going to have to make..." And then the train jiggled, and it began to move. And then the policeman said, "Shitting fuck." And then he looked at the ceiling of the train, and he put his hands together in front of his mouth, like people do when they're praying to God in heaven. And he breathed really loudly into his hands, and he made a whistling noise. And then he stopped, because the train jiggled again, and he had to grab hold of one of the straps which was hanging from the ceiling. And then he said, "Don't move." And then he took out his walkie-talkie and pressed a button and said, "Rob..." "Yeah, it's Nigel." "I'm stuck on the bloody train." "Yeah. Don't even... Look, it stops at Didcot Parkway. So if you can get someone to meet me with a car..." "Cheers. Tell his old man we've got him, but it's going to take a while, okay?" "Great." And then he clicked his walkie-talkie off, and he said, "Let's get ourselves a seat." And he pointed to two long seats nearby, which faced each other, and he said, "Park yourself, and no monkey business." And the people who were sitting on the seats got up and walked away, because he was a policeman, and we sat down facing one another. And he said, "You're a bloody handful, you are, jeez." And I wondered whether the policeman would help me find 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG. And I looked out of the window, and we were going past factories and scrapyards full of old cars, and there were four caravans in a muddy field with two dogs and some clothes hanging up to dry. And outside the window was like a map, except that it was in three dimensions and it was life-size, because it was the thing it was a map of. And there were so many things, it made my head hurt. So I closed my eyes, and then I opened them again, because it was like flying, but nearer to the ground. And I think flying is good. And then the countryside started, and there were fields and cows and horses, and a bridge and a farm and more houses, and lots of little roads with cars on. And that made me think that there must be millions of miles of train track in the world, and they all go past houses and roads and rivers and fields. And that made me think how many people must be in the world, and they all have houses and roads to travel on, and cars and pets and clothes, and they all eat lunch and go to bed and have names. And this made my head hurt too, so I closed my eyes again and did counting and groaning. And when I opened my eyes, the policeman was reading a newspaper called The Sun, and on the front of the paper it said, £3 million Anderson's Call Girl Shame. And it had a picture of a man and a picture of a lady in a bra underneath. And then I did some maths practice in my head, solving quadratic equations. And then I wanted to go for a wee, but I was on a train. And I didn't know how long it would take us to get to London, and I felt a panic starting, and I started to tap a rhythm on the glass with my knuckles to help me wait and not think about wanting to go for a wee. And I looked at my watch, and I waited for 17 minutes. But when I want to go for a wee, I have to go really quickly, which is why I like to be at home or at school, and I always go for a wee before I get on the bus, which is why I leaked a bit and wet my trousers. And the policeman looked across at me and said, "Oh, Christ, you've..." And then he put his newspaper down and said, "For God's sake, go to the bloody toilet, will you?" And I said, "But I'm on a train." And he said, "They do have toilets on trains, you know." And I said, "Where is the toilet on the train?" And he pointed and said, "Through those doors there. But I'll be keeping an eye on you, understand?" And I said, "No." Because I knew what keeping an eye on someone meant, but he couldn't look at me when I was in the toilet. And he said, "Just go to the bloody toilet." So I got up out of my seat, and I closed my eyes so that my eyelids were just little slits so I couldn't see the other people on the train, and I walked to the door, and when I got through the door, there was another door on the right, and it was half open, and it said toilet on it, so I went inside. And it was horrible inside, because there was poo on the seat of the toilet, and it smelt of poo, like the toilet at school when Joseph has been for a poo on his own, because he plays with it. And I didn't want to use the toilet because of the poo, which was the poo of people I didn't know, and brown. But I had to, because I really wanted to wee. So I closed my eyes and went for a wee, and the train wobbled, and lots went on the seat and on the floor. But I wiped my penis with toilet paper and flushed the toilet. And then I tried to use the sink, but the tap didn't work. So I put spit on my hands and wiped them with a paper tissue and put it into the toilet. Then I went out of the toilet, and I saw that opposite the toilet there were two shelves with cases and a rucksack on them. And it made me think of the airing cupboard at home, and how I climb in there sometimes, and it makes me feel safe. So I climbed onto the middle shelf, and I pulled one of the cases across like a door so that I was shut in. And it was dark, and there was no one in there with me, and I couldn't hear people talking. So I felt much calmer, and it was nice. And I did some more quadratic equations, and I made some of the coefficients large so that they were hard to solve. And then the train started to slow down, and someone came and stood near the shelf and knocked on the door of the toilet, and it was the policeman, and he said, "Christopher! Christopher!" And then he opened the door of the toilet and said, "Bloody hell!" And he was really close so that I could see his walkie-talkie and his truncheon on his belt, and I could smell his aftershave. But he didn't see me, and I didn't say anything, because I didn't want him to take me to father. And then he went away again, running. And then the train stopped, and I wondered if it was London, but I didn't move because I didn't want the policeman to find me. And then a lady with a jumper that had bees and flowers made of wool on it came and took the rucksack off the shelf over my head, and she said, "You scared the living daylights out of me!" But I didn't say anything. And then she said, "I think someone's out there on the platform looking for you." But I carried on not saying anything. And she said, "Well, it's your lookout," and she went away. And then three other people walked past, and one of them was a black man in a long white dress, and he put a big parcel on the shelf above my head, but he didn't see me. And then the train started going again. Chapter 199. People believe in God because the world is very complicated, and they think it's very unlikely that anything as complicated as a flying squirrel or the human eye or a brain could happen by chance. But they should think logically, and if they thought logically, they'd see that they can only ask this question because it's already happened and they exist. And there are billions of planets where there is no life, but there's no one on those planets with brains to notice. And it's like, if everyone in the world was tossing coins, eventually someone would get 5,698 heads in a row, and they'd think they were very special. But they wouldn't be, because there would be millions of people who didn't get 5,698 heads. And there's life on Earth because of an accident. But it's a very special kind of accident. And for this accident to happen in this special way, there have to be three conditions. And these are: 1. Things have to make copies of themselves. This is called replication. 2. They have to make small mistakes when they do this. This is called mutation. 3. These mistakes have to be the same in their copies. This is called heritability. And these conditions are very rare, but they are possible, and they cause life. And it just happens. But it doesn't have to end up with rhinoceroses and human beings and whales. It could end up with anything. And, for example, some people say, how can an eye happen by accident? Because an eye has to evolve from something else very like an eye, and it doesn't just happen because of a genetic mistake. And what is the use of half an eye? But half an eye is very useful. Because half an eye means that an animal can see half of an animal that wants to eat it and get out of the way, and it'll eat the animal that only has a third of an eye, or 49% of an eye instead, because it hasn't got out of the way quick enough, and the animal that is eaten won't have babies because it's dead. And people who believe in God think God has put human beings on the earth, because they think human beings are the best animal. But human beings are just an animal, and they'll evolve into another animal. And that animal will be cleverer, and it will put human beings into a zoo, like we put chimpanzees and gorillas into a zoo. Or human beings will all catch a disease and die out, or they'll make too much pollution and kill themselves. And then there'll only be insects in the world, and they'll be the best animal. Chapter 211. Then I wondered whether I should have got off the train because it had just stopped at London, and I was scared because if the train went anywhere else, it would be somewhere where I didn't know anybody. And then somebody went to the toilet, and then they came out again, but they didn't see me, and I could smell their poo, and it was different from the smell of the poo that I smelt in the toilet when I went in there. And then I closed my eyes, and I did some more maths puzzles, so I didn't think about where I was going. And then the train stopped again, and I thought about getting off the shelf and going to get my bag and get off the train. But I didn't want to be found by the policeman and be taken to father, so I stayed on the shelf and didn't move, and no one saw me this time. And then I remembered that there was a map on the wall of one of the classrooms at school, and it was a map of England and Scotland and Wales, and it showed you where all the towns were, and I pictured it in my head with Swindon and London on it. And I'd been looking at my watch since the train had started at 12:59 p.m. And the first stop had been at 1:16 p.m, which was 17 minutes later. And it was now 1:39 p.m, which was 23 minutes after the stop, which meant that we'd be at the sea if the train didn't go in a big curve. But I didn't know if it went in a big curve. And then there were another four stops, and four people came and took bags away from the shelves, and two people put bags on the shelves. But no one moved the big suitcase that was in front of me, and only one person saw me, and they said, "You are fucking weird, mate." And that was a man in a suit. And six people went to the toilet, but they didn't do poos that I could smell, which was good. And then the train stopped, and a lady with a yellow waterproof coat came and took the big suitcase away, and she said, "Have you touched this?" And I said, "Yes." And then she went away. And then a man stood next to the shelf, and he said, "Come and look at this, Barry. They've got, like, a train elf." And another man came and stood next to him and said, "Well, we have both been drinking." And the first man said, "Perhaps we should feed him some nuts." And the second man said, "You're the one who's bloody nuts." And the first one said, "Come on, shift it, you daft cunt. I need more beers before I sober up." And then they went away. And then the train was really quiet, and it didn't move again, and I couldn't hear anyone. So I decided to get off the shelf and go and get my bag and see if the policeman was still sitting in his seat. So I got off the shelf, and I looked through the door, but the policeman wasn't there. And my bag had gone as well, which had Toby's food in it, and my maths books, and my clean pants and vest and shirt, and the orange juice, and the milk, and the clementines, and the custard creams and the baked beans. And then I heard the sound of feet, and I turned round, and it was another policeman, not the one who was on the train before, and I could see him through the door in the next carriage, and he was looking under the seats. And I decided that I didn't like policemen so much anymore, so I got off the train. And when I saw how big the room was that the train was in, and I heard how noisy and echoey it was, I had to kneel down on the ground for a bit because I thought I was going to fall over. And when I was kneeling on the ground, I worked out which way to walk, and I decided to walk in the direction the train was going when it came into the station, because if this was the last stop, that was the direction London was in. So I stood up, and I imagined that there was a big red line on the ground which ran parallel to the train to the gate at the far end, and I walked along it, and I said, "Left, right, left, right," again, like before. And when I got to the gate, a man said to me, "I think someone's looking for you, sonny." And I said, who's looking for me, because I thought it might be Mother, and the policeman in Swindon had phoned her up with the phone number I told him. But he said, "A policeman." And I said, "I know." And he said, "Oh, right." And then he said, "You wait here, then, and I'll go and tell them." And he walked back down the side of the train. So I carried on walking, and I could still feel the feeling like a balloon inside my chest, and it hurt, and I covered my ears with my hands, and I went and stood against the wall of a little shop which said, "Hotel and Theatre Reservations. Tell 0207-402-5164 in the middle of the big room." Then I took my hands away from my ears and I groaned to block out the noise. And I looked round the big room at all the signs to see if this was London. And the signs said, "Sweet Pastries, Heathrow Airport Check-in Here, Bagel Factory, Eat, Excellence and Taste, Wide D, Sushi, Station Link." But after a few seconds, they all got jumbled together because there were too many and my brain wasn't working properly and this frightened me. So I closed my eyes again and I counted slowly to 50, but without doing the cubes. And I stood there and I opened my Swiss Army knife in my pocket to make me feel safe, and I held onto it tight. And then I made my hand into a little tube with my fingers, and I opened my eyes and I looked through the tube so that I was only looking at one sign at a time. And after a long time, I saw a sign that said "Information," and it was above a window on a little shop. And a man came up to me, and he was wearing a blue jacket and blue trousers, and he had brown shoes, and he was carrying a book in his hand, and he said, "You look lost." So I took out my Swiss Army knife, and he said, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." And he held up both his hands with his fingers stretched out in a fan, like he wanted me to stretch my fingers out in a fan and touch his fingers because he wanted to say he loved me. But he did it with both hands, not one like Father and Mother, and I didn't know who he was. And then he walked away backwards. So I went to the shop that said "Information," and I could feel my heart beating very hard, and I could hear a noise like the sea in my ears. And when I got to the window, I said, "Is this London?" But there was no one behind the window. And then someone sat behind the window, and she was a lady, and she was black, and she had long fingernails which were painted pink. And I said, "Is this London?" And she said, "Sure is, honey." And I said, "Is this London?" And she said, "Indeed it is." And I said, "How do I get to 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG? And she said, "Where's that?" And I said, "It's 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG. And sometimes you can write it 451C Chapter Road, Willesden, London, NW25NG. And the lady said to me, "Take the tube to Willesden Junction, honey, or Willesden Green. Got to be near there somewhere." And I said, "What sort of tube?" And she said, "Are you for real?" And I didn't say anything. And she said, "Over there. See that big staircase with the escalators? See the sign says underground? Take the Bakerloo line to Willesden Junction or the Jubilee to Willesden Green. You okay, honey?" And I looked where she was pointing, and there was a big staircase going down into the ground, and there was a big sign over the top of it that said "Underground." And I thought, I can do this, because I was doing really well, and I was in London, and I would find my mother. And I had to think to myself, the people are like cows in a field, and I just had to look in front of me all the time and make a red line along the floor in the picture of the big room in my head and follow it. And I walked across the big room to the escalators. And I kept hold of my Swiss Army knife in my pocket, and I held on to Toby in my other pocket to make sure he didn't escape. And the escalators was a staircase, but it was moving. And people stepped onto it, and it carried them down and up. And it made me laugh, because I hadn't been on one before, and it was like something in a science fiction film about the future. But I didn't want to use it, so I went down the stairs instead. And then I was in a smaller room underground, and there were lots of people, and there were pillars which had blue lights in the ground around the bottom of them, and I liked these, but I didn't like the people. So I saw a photo booth, like the one I went into on 25th March 1994 to have my passport photo done, and I went into the photo booth because it was like a cupboard, and it felt safer, and I could look out through the curtain. And I did detecting by watching, and I saw that people were putting tickets into grey gates and walking through, and some of the people were buying tickets at big black machines on the wall. And I watched 47 people do this, and I memorised what to do. Then I imagined a red line on the floor, and I walked over to the wall, where there was a poster, which was a list of places to go, and it was alphabetical. And I saw Willesden Green, and it said £2.20. And then I went to one of the machines, and there was a little screen which said, press ticket type. And I pressed the button that most people had pressed, which was adult single, and £2.20. And the screen said, insert £2.20. And I put 3 £1 coins into the slot, and there was a clinking noise, and the screen said, take ticket and change. And there was a ticket in a little hole at the bottom of the machine, and a 50p coin and a 20p coin and a 10p coin. And I put the coins in my pocket, and I went up to one of the grey gates, and I put my ticket into the slot, and it sucked it in, and it came out on the other side of the gate. And someone said, get a move on. And I made the noise like a dog barking, and I walked forward. And the gate opened this time, and I took my ticket like other people did, and I liked the grey gate, because that was like something in a science fiction film about the future too. And then I had to work out which way to go. So I stood against a wall so people didn't touch me, and there was a sign for Bakerloo Line and District and Circle Line, but not one for Jubilee Line, like the lady had said. So I made a plan, and it was to go to Willesden Junction on the Bakerloo Line. And there was another sign for the Bakerloo Line, and I read all the words, and I found Willesden Junction, so I followed the arrow, and I went through the left-hand tunnel, and there was a fence down the middle of the tunnel, and the people were walking straight ahead on the left and coming the other way on the right, like on a road. So I walked along the left, and the tunnel curved left, and then there were more gates, and a sign that said Bakerloo Line, and it pointed down an escalator. So I had to go down the escalators, and I had to hold on to the rubber rail, but that moved too, so I didn't fall over. And people were standing close to me, and I wanted to hit them to make them go away, but I didn't hit them because of the caution. And then I was at the bottom of the escalators, and I had to jump off, and I tripped and bumped into someone, and they said, easy. And there were two ways to go, and one said northbound, and I went that way because Willesden was on the top half of the map, and the top is always north on maps. And then I was in another train station, but it was tiny, and it was in a tunnel, and there was only one track, and the walls were curved, and they were covered in big adverts, and they said, way out, and London's Transport Museum, and take time out to regret your career choice, and Jamaica, and British Rail, and no smoking, and be moved, and be moved, and be moved, and for stations beyond Queen's Park, take the first train and change at Queen's Park if necessary, and Hammersmith and City Line, and you're closer than my family ever gets. And there were lots of people standing in the little station, and it was underground, so there weren't any windows, and I didn't like that, so I found a seat which was a bench, and I sat at the end of the bench. And then lots of people started coming into the little station, and someone sat down on the other end of the bench, and it was a lady who had a black briefcase and purple shoes and a brooch shaped like a parrot. And the people kept coming into the little station so that it was even more crowded than the big station. And then I couldn't see the walls anymore, and the back of someone's jacket touched my knee, and I felt sick, and I started groaning really loudly, and the lady on the bench stood up, and no one else sat down. And I felt like I felt when I had the flu, and I had to stay in bed all day, and all of me hurt, and I couldn't walk or eat or go to sleep or do maths. And then there was a sound like people fighting with swords, and I could feel a strong wind, and a roaring started, and I closed my eyes, and the roaring got louder, and I groaned really loudly, but I couldn't block it out of my ears, and I thought the little station was going to collapse, or there was a big fire somewhere and I was going to die. And then the roaring turned into a clattering and a squealing, and it got slowly quieter, and then it stopped, and I kept my eyes closed because I felt safer not seeing what was happening. And then I could hear people moving again because it was quieter, and I opened my eyes. I couldn't see anything at first because there were too many people. And then I saw that they were getting onto a train that wasn't there before. And it was the train which was the roaring. And there was sweat running down my face from under my hair. And I was moaning, not groaning, but different, like a dog when it's hurt its paw. And I heard the sound, but I didn't realise it was me at first. And then the train doors closed, and the train started moving, and it roared again, but not as loud this time. And five carriages went past, and it went into the tunnel at the end of the little station, and it was quiet again, and the people were all walking into the tunnels that went out of the little station. And I was shaking, and I wanted to be back at home. And then I realised I couldn't be at home, because Father was there, and he told a lie, and he killed Wellington, which meant that it wasn't my home anymore. My home was 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG. And it scared me, having a wrong thought, like a wish I was back at home again, because it meant my mind wasn't working properly. And then more people came into the little station, and it became fuller, and then the roaring began again, and I closed my eyes, and I sweated and felt sick, and I felt the feeling like a balloon inside my chest, and it was so big I found it hard to breathe. And then the people went away on the train, and the little station was empty again. And then it filled up with people, and another train came with the same roaring. And it was exactly like having flu that time, because I wanted it to stop, like you can just pull the plug of a computer out of the wall if it crashes, because I wanted to go to sleep so that I wouldn't have to think, because the only thing I could think was how much it hurt, because there was no room for anything else in my head. But I couldn't go to sleep, and I just had to sit there, and there was nothing to do except to wait and to hurt.
This ends Disc 4. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, Disc 5.
Chapter 223. And this is another description, because Siobhan said I should do descriptions, and it's a description of the advert that was on the wall of the little train station opposite me. But I can't remember all of it because I thought I was going to die. And the advert said, "Dream holiday. Think Kuoni in Malaysia." And behind the writing there was a big photograph of two orangutans, and they were swinging on branches, and there were trees behind them, but the leaves were blurred because the camera was focusing on the orangutans and not the leaves, and the orangutans were moving. An orangutan comes from the Malaysian word orang hutan, which means man of the woods. And adverts are pictures or television programs to make you buy things like cars or Snickers or use an internet service provider. But this was an advert to make you go to Malaysia on a holiday. And Malaysia is in Southeast Asia, and it's made up of Peninsular Malaysia and Sabah and Sarawak and Labuan, and the capital is Kuala Lumpur, and the highest mountain is Mount Kinabalu, which is 4,101 metres high. But that wasn't on the advert. And Siobhan says people go on holidays to see new things and relax. But it wouldn't make me relaxed, and you can see new things by looking at Earth under a microscope, or drawing the shape of the solid made when three circular rods of equal thickness intersect at right angles. And I think that there are so many things just in one house that it would take years to think about all of them properly. And also, a thing is interesting because of thinking about it, and not because of it being new. For example, Siobhan showed me that you can wet your finger and rub the edge of a thin glass and make a singing noise. And you can put different amounts of water in different glasses and they make different notes because they have what are called different resonant frequencies. And you can play a tune like Three Blind Mice. And lots of people have thin glasses in their houses and they don't know you can do this. And the advert said, Malaysia, truly Asia. Stimulated by the sights and smells, you realize that you have arrived in a land of contrasts. You seek out the traditional, the natural, and the cosmopolitan. Your memories stretch from city days to nature reserves to lazy hours on the beach. Prices from £575 per person. Call us on 01306 747000. See your travel agent or visit the world at www.kuoni.co.uk. A world of difference. And there were three other pictures, and they were very small, and they were a palace and a beach and a palace. Chapter 227. And I kept my eyes closed and didn't look at my watch at all. And the trains coming in and out of the station were in a rhythm, like music or drumming. And it was like counting and saying left, right, left, right, left, right, which Siobhan taught me to do to make myself calm. And I was saying in my head, train coming, train stopped, train going, silence, train coming, train stopped, train going, as if the trains were only in my mind. And normally, I don't imagine things that aren't happening because it's a lie and it makes me feel scared. But it was better than watching the trains coming in and out of the station because that made me feel even more scared. And I didn't open my eyes and I didn't look at my watch. And it was like being in a dark room with the curtains closed so I couldn't see anything. Like when you wake up at night and the only sounds you hear are the sounds inside your head. And that made it better, because it was like the little station wasn't there, outside my head, but I was in bed and I was safe. And then the silences between the trains coming and going got longer and longer. And I could hear that there were fewer people in the little station when the train wasn't there. So I opened my eyes and I looked at my watch and it said 8:07 p.m. And I had been sitting on the bench for approximately 5 hours, but it hadn't seemed like approximately 5 hours, except that my bottom hurt and I was hungry and thirsty. And then I realized that Toby was missing, because he wasn't in my pocket. And I didn't want him to be missing, because we weren't in Father's house or Mother's house, and there wasn't anyone to feed him in the little station, and he'd die, and he might get run over by a train. And then I looked up at the ceiling, and I saw that there was a long black box which was a sign, and it said, 1. Harrow and Weldston, 2 minutes. 3. Queen's Park, 7 minutes. And then the bottom line scrolled up and disappeared, and a different line scrolled up into its place, and the sign said, 1. Harrow and Weldston, 1 minute. 2. Wilsdon Junction, 4 minutes. And then it changed again, and it said, 1. Harrow and Weldston, stand back, train approaching. And then I heard the sound like sword fighting and the roaring of a train coming into the station, and I worked out that there was a big computer somewhere, and it knew where all the trains were, and it sent messages to the black boxes in the little stations to say when the trains were coming. And that made me feel better, because everything had an order and a plan. And then the train came into the little station, and it stopped. And 5 people got onto the train, and another person ran into the little station and got on, and 7 people got off the train, and then the doors closed automatically, and the train went away. And when the next train came, I wasn't so scared anymore, because the sign said, train approaching, so I knew it was going to happen. And then I decided that I'd look for Toby, because there were only 3 people in the little station. So I stood up, and I looked up and down the little station and in the doorways that went into the tunnels, but I couldn't see him anywhere. And then I looked down into the black lower down bit where the rails were. And then I saw 2 mice, and they were black because they were covered in dirt. And I liked that because I like mice and rats, but they weren't Toby, so I carried on looking. And then I saw Toby, and he was also in the lower down bit where the rails were, and I knew he was Toby, because he was white, and he had a brown egg shape on his back.
so I climbed down off the concrete. And he was eating a bit of rubbish that was an old sweet paper, and someone shouted, "Jesus, what are you doing?" And I bent down to catch Toby, but he ran off. And I walked after him, and I bent down again, and I said, "Toby, Toby, Toby," and I held out my hand.